This is Central Time. I'm Cynthia Schuster.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Wedding season is in high gear, and it's the perfect occasion to raise a glass and toast the bride and groom.
And of course, there are plenty of other milestones to commemorate throughout the year, but while many of us don't fancy ourselves expert speechwriters, we don't want our toasts to flop either.
Our next guest has some advice for proposing a toast that will leave a lasting impression in a good way. Paul Dixon is the author of a dozen word books and dictionaries. His latest is called Rising to the Occasion, the Best Toast for Any Celebration. Paul, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. Welcome to here.
Well, before we get into specific toasts, you've got some solid advice for people who are taking on an enterprise like this, giving the toast. What is the first piece of advice you have?
Pretty much to keep the toast short. It's a minute is probably a good piece of reckoning for a toast. You have to understand people. You've asked people to raise their glasses, so they've already, you've got a whole room full of people there with their arms up. And also you want to make it as succinct and as, you know, to the point as it can be. One of the sort of the general concepts around a toast is that it's really a verbal souvenir. If you think about a wedding being the perfect example. But if you think about a wedding, I mean, all the planning, all the money, all the everything else that goes into the wedding, and then there's the toast, right? In the middle of it is this one moment of sort of grace that doesn't cost anything and is just there. It's not the wine, it's not the champagne, it's not the food, it's not the dress or anything else. And what you want to do, as the giver of the toast, you want to give basically the people who are there a verbal souvenir, a moment to remember, a moment to cherish. And so the toast has got to be, it's almost like haiku or sonnet. It's got to be precise, and it's got to be meaningful. And there are a whole lot of, you know, things it shouldn't be, which I can get into in a second. But think concise and think direct. And think in terms of the people in the room taking something home with them. It's not like, you know, taking home a garter or a bouquet. It's taking home this one moment. And I've been at weddings, in particular, where the toast was so good and so sublime and so genuine that I'll probably never forget it. But I've also been at weddings where the toast was so bad and so contrived that it's sort of a bump on the radar, a blip on the radar you don't want to remember.
Yeah, and I imagine many people want to, they aspire to be funny, and even if they're funny people, sometimes there's a right time for that and wrong. Should we aspire to be funny in our toast?
No, in fact, witty is one, it's the difference between being witty, which is being clever and trying to be funny. I mean, you're not, I don't know what comedian you think about, but you're not Dick Gregory, you're not, you know, George Carlin, you're not. I mean, that's not the point. And I think one of the things that's happened to toasting is one of the great enemies of toasting has been YouTube, because there are a lot of really gross, X-rated and embarrassing toast situations on YouTube. And a lot of, especially younger people, say, oh, isn't that funny? You know, isn't that wonderful? Isn't that great? Isn't that hysterical? And they don't realize it's not like they're you know, in a nightclub or a comedy club. And so they'll pattern a toast after something that's on YouTube, which really turns into a horror show. I mean, the great example is there's I actually interviewed a wedding planner who talked about this, and there was a wedding in California. One of the toast was had to do with the bride, and the gag was, supposed gag was, as part of the toast to the bride, was asking all the men in the room to bring up to the front of the room her apartment key, as if she was slept with all these men in the room. And this had come right off YouTube, and the guys who were all plants had come up and put the keys in the hat, and it destroyed the wedding. This was a $100,000 or $50,000 wedding, and so one of the things that's happened in this age of you know YouTube and Comedy Central and, you know, X-rated being okay, is that it's people don't see the barrier between when they've got to, you know, really control themselves and be about the business of their wedding and not, you know, pattern itself off some gag they saw at 3 o'clock in the morning.
And it sounds like this is not the time to pull off a practical joke. You know, that could have been seen as a joke, but just the wrong time, the wrong place.
It is. And I think the other thing you got to realize about it all is it's not about the toaster. It's about the person, the people being toasted, the people being recognized in the toast. And you know I think the bigger message you escape about the practical joke is true. And it's also a lot of it's about delivery. It's standing up there and being declarative and saying things that you really hold positive. Let's say it's a wedding about the couple, or if it's a retirement toast about the person being toasted. And don't hem and haw. I mean, really come up with a couple lines. And the other advice I give a lot of people, and this is one of the reasons this little book is useful, I think, is to use other people's lines. In other words, I've got dozens of lines in here from Shakespeare and Mark Twain, which I've put in this collection. But you don't need my collection to do that. But sometimes you use it sort of as an aid to the toast to say, as Shakespeare once said, or as Mark Twain once said, or as John Milton once said, or once wrote, and use those as little cushions to sort of elevate the level of what your toast is all about. Because the other thing about it is, it's about a formality. It starts with the raising of the glasses. It ends with a clink, and you shouldn't clink. It shouldn't be a clunk. It should be just a light clink. And even if you know the history of some of these, the pieces of the whole thing, I mean, clinking was the same reason. It's sort of interesting, anthropologically. But clinking is the same reason we have church bells, that they're there for sort of hallelujah and celebration. But it's also, if you go back to the early days of the church and the early days of the various religions, the devil or the evil spirits were hated the sound of bells. Bells were an anathema. It was sort of like vampires and crosses that it drove them away. The devil, evil spirits hated bells.
And so light clinks, I'm guessing you don't want us to be banging our silverware against the glass either.
No, that's another no-no.
And then we find broken glass everywhere. You say, though, that we should think of our toast as a terribly important verbal souvenir. What do you mean by that?
Just something that somebody will remember, something that somebody will take with them. It could be just a little thing about the person and some situation they were in, or a time they helped a stranger who was in trouble. Or it could just be a tiny little piece. A recollection of one of this couple, or the couple themselves, or of it, such an individual, say in a retirement thing, of a moment when they really surpassed, and just say, we all remember the night that so and so went out of his way to save that, you know, to do such a thing, because the people leaving will say, well, wasn't that amazing what he just said? Wasn't that amazing that they remembered that moment? And again, it's our heads are full of. You know, our memories are full of little pieces rather than, you know, our memory is not a coherent narrative. So we've got all this, it's sort of cluttered with these little souvenirs on shelves in our brains. And so remembering a retirement or remembering a graduation toast or remembering the baptism of a baby or a wedding or something, you want to remember some little piece of some verbal piece that you can take with you. It's hard to give examples because you sort of know it when you hit it. I mean, I was at a wedding about a year ago in which somebody mentioned, the best man mentioned that when the groom's mother was in the hospital with cancer, that the first flowers came from the groom. And it was just this one little thing, you know, about the flowers and the first person to send flowers to the hospital. And it was just—it was one of those things you remember. You can't script that in advance. You have to sort of feel that little bit.
We're learning how to craft the perfect toast right now with Paul Dixon. He's the author of the book *Rising to the Occasion: The Best Toast for Any Celebration*.
Right now, we're talking with Paul Dixon, author of Rising to the Occasion, the best toast for any celebration. And we're taking your calls and questions as well. Are you preparing a speech for a special occasion? Need help figuring out exactly what to say and how to say it? You can get in touch with us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Paul, we were talking before the news about some no-nos of toast giving, like trying to be funny when perhaps it's not the right occasion to do so. But you also have some other rules, like, for example, never refuse to participate in a toast. Tell us more about that.
Well, it's just bad form. I mean, even if you're a teetotaler or don't have a glass in your hand, fake it. It's because it is a celebratory moment. I mean, if you've got some monster axe to grind with somebody in the room and you don't want to toast, swallow your pride into it. It's just one of those moments when, sort of as a human gesture, you're called upon to participate. I mean, and the other thing about toasting, which is really interesting, because I did a lot of research. I did an earlier, much more of a book looking at the history of toasting. And it goes back. I mean, even the most primitive cultures have some form of pledging to another, of acknowledge the other, and with some vessel of some sort, including this one is one of my favorite things to discover that apparently the skull of the skulling of the Nordic cultures is it goes back to the drinking from the skulls of the vanquished of your enemy. So that we a direct allusion to the skull.
I had no idea.
Yes, and there were also, the famous ones where the toasting in flagons and mugs and different vessels with glass bottoms, so you could make sure that nobody was going to do you damage as you were drinking. In other words, you would pull up, make sure you could have a view if you were toasting with somebody that might turn on you. So a lot of the toasting has to do with sort of ancient rituals of behavior and then a lot of it was about pledging one's trust when you would touch the glass and you would do that to each other. So you always want to be part of the action.
And what if we're on the receiving end of a toast? What's the proper way to graciously respond, maybe even in those cases where it was kind of a flop?
Well, I think you just nod and say thank you. I mean, I think there's... You know, it's sort of like getting a bad necktie or something for a man, you know, ugly necktie as a gift. You just sort of accept it and then take it back to the store the next day.
Well, Paul, what is the classiest toast that you've ever heard?
Oh, it's not really classiest, but it's the one that always works. Is days of ease, nights of pleasure. That's the one toast I know you can get a smile out of. You just get out to the bride and groom, days of ease, nights of pleasure, and that always gets a smile. But there are some very elaborate, wonderful Shakespearean quotes, and there's some very funny ones. Samuel Johnson, one of my favorites for a second marriage is "To the Triumph of Hope Over Experience." Samuel Johnson. So again, a lot of them get to be commingled with one another. You take something from an Irish toast and something from another toast and sort of put them together.
1-800-642-1234 is the number to call if you'd like to join our conversation. What's the most memorable toast you ever heard? Tell us about a toast you might have given, perhaps, for a special occasion. 1-800-642-1234. And our email address is talk@wpr.org. We did receive an email from a listener who says, "Our younger son gave the best wedding toast we've ever heard when he was the best man for his older brother. He gave examples of all the ways he strove to be like his brother throughout the years. Then he told how difficult it will be to match his brother in choice of bride. What a way to endear himself to his new sister-in-law. And that young man is having his own wedding next month with his older brother as best man. I can only hope he can do as well." So that's a great comment from our listener. Paul, what advice would you have for the older brother who kind of has some big shoes to fill in that department?
Oh, I think they're in the right ballpark already, because they understand how it all works, and the fact that they remembered and were willing to sit down. I mean, you realize that somebody willing to sit down and explain that to you in an email or on a whatever, however vehicle you got it, but it understands the dynamics of the thing, talking about the brother, talking about, and it wasn't about him. It was, the only thing was about him was he hoped he would get have a bride as fine as his brothers. But I think that family understands how it works, and they'll come out fine.
So we think generally of toasting at weddings, but what are some other, you know, ideal spots to try to toast? Maybe bring a little ceremony to an occasion.
Oh, I think just being in somebody else's house. I mean, I think I spent some time in Europe, and it was very common to welcome people to the house. The first time that somebody was visiting your house, you propose a toast and welcome them and hope to see them many more times. And my wife and I still do that when somebody moves in the neighborhood and we have them over for dinner. And we'll just at the end of the meal or at the beginning of the meal at some point just, you know, raise our glasses and say, this is to welcome you and we were happy to have you in the neighborhood. And we'll just, you know, we'll hope there are many more occasions when we get to celebrate and, you know, and hope we can become close friends. And it's that basic. But it's just a moment in which you can sort of clarify why they're there and why you're happy they're there and your intention. Your intention is to welcome them and to make them feel comfortable. And there's probably a few things that make them quite as comfortable. I mean, you could give them, you know, a bottle of something or something, but the actually welcoming in a sort of a ceremony where you hold the glass up and you ask for silence and such is, you know, that's a perfect occasion. Other occasions are just, you know, birthdays. I mean, I go a lot of, I'm in my 70s, so I go to a lot of birthday parties of old people and friends. It's all very common at a birthday party to come people to bring toasts with them and write them. And that's more of a time to be funny. You know, it's not a wedding, it's much more of a solemn occasion. Somebody's 72nd birthday isn't a solemn occasion. It's a little bit more raucous, perhaps, or a birthday, mm-hmm. or a St. Patrick's Day toast, or a toast at a, you know, Valentine's Day or something. Those could be a little bit more raucous and such. But this is the time of the year we think of the main thing we're thinking about are weddings and such. But there's some people that just love to do it. Some people that just be having lunch together at a table. It's like, it's a little bit like saying grace. It's an old-fashioned concept that keeps poking its head up. When I started looking into toasts in the late 60s, I've written several books on toasting and done a lot of looking into toasts, and it was very unpopular. It was a time in the 60s when we were throwing away all of these traditions, and it was sort of, you know, long hair and sort of, you know, do your own thing kind of thing. So things like toasting sort of fell out of fashion, but it's come back with a roar of vengeance.
We've got a caller who wants to chime in on this. Gerhard in Milwaukee is with us next. Hi there.
Hello.
What is your story?
How are you?
Good, thank you.
In 1989, I was working in Beijing, China, and I was staying at a company guest house, and at the same time, there was a group of Russians there, and the Russians and there's two of us Americans were there and a couple of Chinese representatives. We were sitting around one night drinking Russian vodka and Milwaukee beer, and I made a toast. I said, we have the representatives from the three most powerful countries in the world here. We can solve all the world's problems tonight.
How did that go over?
It was spectacular. Everybody just thought it was wonderful. And put it in the context, this is in November of 1989, and that when the Berlin Wall came down and it was 6 months after Tiananmen Square incidents. So it was a pretty amazing night.
Great. Well, thank you for that story. What do you think about how Gerhard did, Paul?
Well, I think that's fantastic. And the thing I immediately thought of was remember the Apollo-Soyuz space mission where the American and the Soviet spaceships they join each other and then the astronauts transferred and the cosmonauts transferred between the two vehicles. And of course, they had a toast up there, but because of the weightlessness, their drinks were in tubes, like toothpaste tubes. But they toasted up there. That was probably the first toast in orbit, or an international toast in orbit. And it was the same kind of thing where that was the moment they just paused. The Cold War was over for that moment, and they could do that. So Gerhard's story is very nice.
Well, toasts seem like a formal and antiquated practice. I think you were just getting to this just a moment ago, but they still manage to stand the test of time. How can we keep this tradition fresh and alive well into the future?
I just think to be creative, to be, you know, thoughtful. I mean, I think it's like we'll spend, you know, again, going back to the wedding analogy or the wedding example, I mean, we'll spend vast amounts of time deciding what shoes we want to wear to the wedding or what we want to do, but we won't spend that much time on the toast. And I think that's the whole thing. You've got to sit down and, you know, put yourself in a corner for a half an hour or so and just write something that's really good. And not everybody's a great writer, but they can figure it out. And it's really what you're saying that's more important than the way you say it.
Paul, can you leave us with one final, charming, good all-purpose toast?
Health to everyone, from the tip of the roof to the side of the fire, from wall to wall, and if there's anyone in the wall, speak up.
That's nice. It's a great place to leave it. Paul, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks a million.
It was Paul Dixon, author of Rising to the Occasion, The Best Toast for Any Celebration.